As we were standing there worshiping, I thought, Lord, I'd just like to pray with my brothers and sisters before we read. And I'd more or less prepared my heart and my mind to pray with you. And then Lizzie opened her mouth and prayed my prayer. So we'll leave it at that. Thank you, Lizzie. Abraham, this afternoon, well, the first session, it's all about a man, and then later it's all about Ruth. And so I was wondering whether I was doing the right thing, sharing about this man with my sisters. And I looked around and I counted, and we're more or less level. Hebrews chapter 11. And by faith Abraham, verse 8, obeyed . That's the kind of offering our Lord wants. Obedience brings us into complete harmony with His heart's desire. And I know what it is to be a disobedient son. And I know how I troubled my dad and the whole family through conscience. Disobedience, in the end, rebellion. And I've had to deal with my own kids in disobedience. And I know the joy of having obedient children. Not only obedient to dad and mom, but obedient to their Father in heaven. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out, and I'm going to come back to that. I just thought I'd read these verses first with you. To the place which he would receive as an inheritance, he was called to go out, we read, and then we read, and he went out, not knowing where he was going. As a kiddie, I sang choruses about Abraham, and my children sang choruses about little kiddies' choruses at Sunday school, and they'd sit and sing, Vater Abraham hat viele Kinder hat Vater Abraham. So there, I could see Abraham. When I thought about Abraham, I thought about lots of children. Although it was a long way there, wasn't it, for him? Today he has so many, and we are his children. Then I thought about Abraham in a tent all the time, you know, in the desert, on the road, moving about, looking for water and palm trees, settling down and moving on. And we read in Genesis how Abraham was always on the road. So I saw him with kids, in a tent, palm trees. And then I thought, what did What did Abraham go out from? What did Abraham leave? And I started to read about what history tells us and the Bible tells us, indirectly and directly, but Abraham is a very rich man. And his dad was a heathen. Terah worshipped idols. And in Germany we say, so the father, so the son. All wrong. It's not true. Abraham couldn't have had a worse father, yet he became such a wonderful man of God because he was willing to step out. But again, where did he step out from? Ur of the Chaldeans, not far from Babylon, lots of other cities round about there. They all had their own fortresses between. Now I get back into this problem of Euphrates, Euphrates, Tigris. What do you say? Tigris? Tigris, Euphrates. So I have fumbled my way through. And Ur was quite close. It was one of many cities, 6-7 cities in that area, 100, 150 miles apart. And they all had their own little fortress. And the fortress wasn't so little. The walls were, and we know for sure that Ur had high walls, 25 meters high, 15 meters wide, broad. Not as great as Babylon that was at its prime time, but they were all great cities. You could have driven a chariot down the wall, like an autobahn. And Ur did not only have great big walls to keep the people in and keep others out. The archaeologists have found palaces, temples, whole temple complexes with tower, like the tower, similar to the tower to Babylon. Houses made of stone, 2 stories high. So I found out that I was wrong about Abraham. When he stepped out of a stone house. Schools, universities, libraries with thousands of tablets. Books made of papyrus. Is that the right pronunciation? I'm looking to Andrew all the time, my teacher. Of stone, of leather. Schools, universities. They were highly educated. They were advanced people. Looking back, we often think, well, you know, as the heathens think, yeah, we're way back. Well, I guess Abraham must have been very hairy 2,000 years ago. Possibly looked just a little bit like a monkey, had a small forehead. Highly educated people. Very religious people. They worshipped the moon. They had a moon god and a moon goddess, and lots of other gods and idols, god of fertility. They worshipped sex. Ur reminds me of the city we live in. Highly educated people with great universities and schools for their kids, but they're bound to a life that is determined to lust. Lust determined the people in Ur. They had priestesses in the temples who would give themselves to the men as a worship to the god of fertility, because they believed that through sex, life came to be. So they worshipped in the darkness of their minds. Now that's not so far away from what we're doing. Is it really? It's just all about sex. Our politicians, we just got to look to Italy. And we say, well, that's his personal life. We look to other countries where our stars, people are worshiping, want to legalize men sleeping with little boys because it is their freedom. And that has been a subject in Holland for years, and it's going to come. Abraham was wealthy, well educated, and he lived within walls, within a city where there were no morals. Everything went, and he could have done everything. He could have had it all and enjoyed it. But the text tells us that Abraham stepped out. We're in the world, but we're not of the world. And I think and believe sincerely that many of us, including my own person, have things we have to step out of. I believe that men have a great responsibility for their wives and children, that they have the courage to step out of such a city, of such a culture, of such a way of thinking, and it takes courage. And I believe very much, because the Old Testament tells us that Abraham was a man of courage. Abraham wasn't a wimp. Abraham was a warrior. Do you know that? I believe that's one of the problems why our beautiful daughters cannot find the man they are looking for. We think it's all about jeans and a t-shirt. It used to be, in my days, a suit and winkle pickers, shiny. Or we had the other creepers. I won't tell you what we called them, but that's what we did. Golden rings. Things have changed. But you know, it's just all to do with an image. It's all outside. T-shirt can just be just as bad. And jeans. And the image. And you got this. My daughter tells me she's into it all. She says, Daddy, you look great.
Daddy, it's in the raggy look. Just rags.
I get my clothes from my neighbors. They chuck them out. They come across the road and they think, this poor family. Yeah, they do. You're laughing. I've said it openly. I'll say it again. It sounds terrible, but it's true. I wear my neighbor's underpants. My wife's got a good washing machine. And poverty makes you humble. Please don't come to church tomorrow with underpants for me. But the raggy look, you see? But it's all image, isn't it? In the end, it's all about me. We're caught up in it all and we don't realize that we're worshiping this idol. We're grooming this idol. There's something we have to step out of. It might not be just as obvious as the things that Abraham had to leave. But Abraham stepped out, and I believe that he was not, as I was saying, a coward. He dealt with fear. Well, better said, God dealt with fear in his life, and we'll see that. But he had, in spite of all those things in his life, the uncertainty, an unknown God, he knew how he had to get out of this place. I want to get out of this place. Come, Lord Jesus. Come. Paul says, rather yesterday than today, but I have a responsibility, so I'll hang on for a couple of days. And I believe that we cannot run away. You see, Abraham did not take the easy way out. He didn't take a rope and hang himself. That is not the way out. We men have responsibility for our wives and our children. I was dealing with a man at church, and he was telling me he had failed so badly. And then I tell him about Abraham and David, you see, but he was so disappointed, discouraged with himself. He asked me, Abraham, it must be terrible, for the things we will be reading about his relationship to Sarah. How terrible. How awful. It's just reading it turns our stomachs. I came to a point in my life looking into the mirror, looking at myself and seeing myself, it turned my stomach. It was revolting. What I saw was revolting. But this man, Abraham, leaves Ur and steps out. And he is going to have to face the battle. God's called him to leave. But it's strange, isn't it? We always bring unnecessary baggage with us, don't we? I travel a lot, so I'm down to a little case. But normally, when we go somewhere, well, you brought all this stuff for you. I don't need it. This bag full of cosmetics. I don't need it. I could do it just with a shoes, t-shirt. I can wash it, hang it out. All this baggage we carry about, things we believe we need. And Lot brought his nephew with him, didn't he? And it's going to cause so much trouble. But God's going to accept it, although he did not tell him. God is going to go with him, and he's going to go with Lot. And God's going to use Lot to shape Abraham's life. God knows about these things beforehand, about our mistakes, and he's got them all planned in. So here we have Abraham. Abraham, the warrior, We also see him as a watchman. He was a man of prayer, the Bible tells us. And he battled with the Lord. And if we find time, which we likely want, we'll read it. Now, Lot had just been carried away by five kings. I don't always get it the right way. And then there was this battle between four kings and five kings. And in the end, Lot is carried away by the kings who were victorious over the other ones. And a man runs back and tells Abraham about what's happened to Lot. And we read in verse 14 of Genesis, in chapter 14 of Genesis and verse 14. Now, when Abraham heard, Lot had been a burden. He must have been getting on Abraham's nerves for a long time. But he was his brother. And as soon as he heard that his brother was in danger, he acted immediately. Now, when Abraham heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained, and I love this word, servants. These men that were living with Abraham were trained servants, subject to authority. And they were ready for battle. We are in a battle. And we should be ready, prepared to battle. We are warriors, as I was saying, and not wimps. And these servants had been with him all the time. That's the wonderful thing about fellowship at church. I was brought up in a church. I fellowshipped as a young man in the church. I grew into relationships, strong relationships. I learned how to pray, how to go out and bring others back, how to be a warrior on my knees, how to pray and seek God for the lives of others. And he went out, or he went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. 318 servants battling against four kings and their armies. Our father Abraham was such a great warrior. That he didn't only overcome these kings and free his brother, who was going to get into trouble again. You ever gone through that? In the fellowship at church, you don't want to lose hope. Abraham never lost hope for his nephew. He risked his life and he gave everything he had. He's an example in that. But he chased them, I guess, something like 150, 150 miles beyond. Well, 150 miles all in all, up to, it says, beyond Damascus. It's a long way. He was a tiger. He was a warrior. And he hated the devil. He hated the enemy. And he overcame him and drove him out. But that's not all we read about Abraham. There are the other situations where he is not much of a warrior at all. He is so worried and concerned about his own safety. And we've only got to turn back a page. And we read about Abraham in his relationship to the woman he loves, the woman God has given him, the woman God has entrusted to him, that he would be a shelter to her, that he would love her in our situation as Christ loves the church, or Christ loved the church according to Ephesians. And when I see how Abraham failed, it moves my heart to see the love and the patience and the hope. And that's the other side about it, that God has for this warrior. He does so well in some things, yet he fails so badly in other ways, so terribly. We read in chapter 12 of Genesis. Has somebody got a handkerchief for me, a tempo or something like that? I got them all in the bag at the back, and I don't want to go walking all that way. I'm too lazy. Thank you. My dad called me wet-nosed Will. It's still so. Now, Abraham had come all the way down to Canaan, and he put up an altar in Hebron. But then he turned towards Egypt because times had gotten hard. And he's not the only one of the saints, the Old Testament saints, that turned to Egypt because they were hungry. And we know that Egypt is the world. So he stepped out. He's left this ugly fortress because he hated what was going on in that city. It hurt him to see these priestesses giving their bodies to men who came to the temple, believing they were worshiping God and doing good by giving their bodies. When I got saved, beginning of the 70s, we had a movement, and they were new to us in Hanover, Children of God. David Moses, that's the way he evangelized. It's true. I saw it. They sent the girls out to win men, young men, for Christ by giving them their bodies. Yes. Not many people know that, and they were banned from Germany, and we still see them in India when I travel to India, and they're still evangelizing in the same way. And David Moses slept with his with the children of his children. Grandpa slept with his grandparents, his grandchildren. So the things we're reading about here are not way out. What Abraham stepped out of, we have to every day step out. No way. I'm not going to have anything to do with it. I'm going to be radical. And I am going to fight for my brothers who are caught up at night when their wives are asleep on the computer, looking at the same stuff. No better. And it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, "Indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance." Wow. If you'd seen her down here walking across our plaza down here with her water vessel on her head, as a man, you would have had to turn away. She was so beautiful. And it's just a gift of God to have a beautiful woman, beautiful inside, beautiful outside. But there was a danger in it, a great danger in it all. And here we see this warrior's fear. And it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, "Indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore, it will happen when the Egyptians see you, see his faith, what he is believing, what he is concentrating on, it's going to happen to him." Fear is a terrible thing, and we'll come to it. "That it will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me." I just cannot believe it. I just cannot believe it that this is the same man who risks his skin. He doesn't even think about it. He leaves immediately and chases four armies 150 miles. And now he's scared about his own skin. You see, that's the spirit in the flesh. That's the spirit in the flesh. That's this battle that we are in. War. Paul says it's war within us. The flesh battling against the spirit. "But they will let you live." What did Christ do for his bride? He gave his men. He gave his life for his bride. And as Christ loved the church, his bride, so are we to love and give our lives for our wives. You women are so lucky. You are so lucky. And you know, when I look into church, I can see women that are being loved. I can see it in their faces when their husbands are loving them. As Christ loves the church, they are full of freedom. They blossom. Full of joy. They are so well fed, they are so well loved in every way. And women are turning from their husbands because, as Paul asks or tells the church in Corinth, what they should be doing and the responsibilities and duties of a man. If you want to call it a duty, for me, it's not a duty, it's a pleasure. but it goes right into the bed. And if a woman is turning away from her husband, it is because her husband is not loving her. Because if I love my wife, the love for my wife is as Christ for the church, irresistible, who can resist the love of Christ? I cannot. Paul tried to fight against it, and he was kicking against the brick. No chance. That's what I cannot understand. How can a man or a woman not love? Resist this love? There will be no excuse. But then again, let's take it home. Brothers, do we love our wives in that way? If a woman is rebelling, trying to control, trying to dominate, it is because we are not loving her. The church submits, the bride submits to the good shepherd because he's a good shepherd. Why should I ever rebel against the shepherd who laid down his life? But we are not laying down our lives. And so here we have this man. They will kill me. Abraham, you poor man. And I'll say it again, isn't our God so patient, so full of love, so full of grace? It knows no bounds. You see, this man has taken one step to know and understand the living God, and God sees that. He sees this finger. It was enough that Abraham took a step trusting God, and this trusting in God, God will never fail Abraham. Never. It contradicts the nature of God. It is impossible. God cannot deny himself. He is faithful, and if we are unfaithful, so he remains faithful. And that is it here. That's the story. And God loves him, and it's such a comfort to me to understand. Because I can see this Abraham in me. I can see the wimp in me, the coward. Now, I'm going to get into this whole thing of fear. You know that fear is a terrible thing. It destroys the lives of men. Fear paralyzes. And David battled with it. He says in Psalm 34, I quote, I sought the Lord and he delivered me from all my fear. Do you know, and I see Abraham as a warrior in prayer. And I believe with all my heart that that is a weapon that David and Abraham knew, and many other men of God. Prayer. There is no place in this world that I can get so close to God as on my knees. And a dear sister said to me, midday, she said, I'm on my knees. And sometimes I get off my knees and hurt him, and I get back onto my knees. And we all know this prayer. I don't want to, you know, it's it's here in chapter 17. The story is so beautiful because there's so much in it. You know that Abraham is quoted at least 18 times in the New Testament? Isn't that crazy? The Lord himself quotes Abraham. And we find it in 18, 23. And I just can't read it because I believe that I should keep my eyes on that clock because Andrew's there and he's got so much on his heart to share with you, and I don't want to pump you full. That's one of my problems. I think, Peter, the longer you speak, you got so many important things to tell these people, Peter. So, you know, let's just do 15 minutes more. And that's why all preachers pray too long.
You know, they've got this just little bit of cream to put on top of it. And people are dying to get home. I don't want to be tempted, especially with Andrew there sitting, and I'm waiting to hear him. But we read in 23, and Abraham came near, and he says, Lord, and if only he knew God's heart. He knew God knows my weaknesses. He knows how I failed my wife, terribly failed my wife. Yet I can call back to Genesis on the name of the Lord. And I can, as Jacob did, wrestle in prayer with God. And you know, God doesn't need it. His heart is there. He would know sooner than anything else. Save people out of their need and dangers and sickness and their fears. But he wants us men to battle, because God is a mighty warrior. And there's a lot of need for warriors, for men of God today. So here in the story, you know the story very well. You know it possibly better than I do. And if you don't, just read it when you get home. You see, Abraham could see this battle. He could see, he must have felt it, how he had failed his wife. And he did it twice, didn't he? Yeah. He does it again. Hey, this is once, surely once is enough. Have you ever done it? Lord, how could I? You just cannot forgive me, Lord. And I believe that's why it's there. It's there for me. Lord, I'm in responsibility in the church. I'm supposed to be an example. You've given me such a lovely wife. And my children love and respect me. And I have not earned it. You are so good to me. Yet I have failed so terribly. Don't give up. A warrior never gives up. Never. I will not leave you, Lord, unless you forgive me and bless me. And then we have Abraham failing again in chapter 20 and verses 11 to the end. And he says in verse 11, because I thought they would kill me. You know, he tries spiritually to cover it up. And indeed, she's my sister. Oh, come on, Abraham. You're trying to excuse it all. You're trying to cover. You failed so badly, you're doing it again, and you're trying to cover it up. Why are you covering it up? It is fear. He does not know that God will forgive. If there's nothing that God will not forgive apart from the sin against the Holy Spirit. He forgives broken marriages. He restores broken marriages. He forgives men and women who have failed badly, you know. And I've seen it in our church. And I've seen men and women having failed so badly within the church that I have served. You know, and I have seen these couples forgiving in such a way that today they sit together and break bread and take the cup. Wow, what a forgiveness. Is there any need for us to fear? There is no need. And what does John say to us? First John, whoever has fear has not yet fully. And let's turn to it. Okay, we'll just finish. Give me 5 minutes, Andy. I'll be finished. And it's what? I'm 45. And I, no, 50, for 45. Give me 50. John. Matthew, man. John, bless the bed I lie upon. Now, 1 John 4, 18. If I've got it right. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. It casts out all fear, because fear involves torment. But he who fears has not been, and I add, okay, we shouldn't add, but please, I'm not drawing it in here. But he who fears has not, and I'd say it in the case of Abraham, has not yet. God can take you there. Has not yet been made perfect. God walks with Abraham in his marriage, in his failure, in the hurt that Sarah goes through. I wonder how did they ever speak about these things, Sarah and Abraham, but they must have in the tent. You see, there was a desert outside, there was nothing, and it was hot and windy. And they got into their tent there together. And Abraham confessed, he was a man of prayer. And he put things straight with Sarah. I'm sure he did. John 16:33. Once again. And as Abraham knew fear, and I've just found out the King James Version does not translate it as some others do. And in German, we have the word tribulation, fear. These things, verse 33 from John 16, these things I have spoken to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation. You will face, experience fear. But the agape love that I have poured out into your hearts, with that, the power of the love, which is selfish. You see, that was his problem. Abraham was thinking about himself, about his skin. But the agape love is the godly love, which is selfish, which sacrifices himself for others, his enemies. I'm going to close now just with two very short stories. And I've been involved in encouraging my brothers in Germany. Brothers and sisters who are waiting on the Lord. They'd like to have a church in their little town. So I go down to minister them, and then I go down further, south east of Koblenz, which is on the Rhine, and encourage other brothers who are elders. And I sat with them, and they really want to become a Calvary Chapel. But they come out of Christian backgrounds, all of them do. They're businessmen, well-to-do people, very hard-working men. They are very capable. They are good at their jobs. And somehow or other, I found out that they weren't baptized. Not one of them. Oh, I was baptized as a baby. And I can accept that in faith, believing that God saw it, and I understand, and I claim it for me, and therefore, and I said, bro, if you see it that way, I have no problem. But how are you going to teach the church? They're all Bible-believing men who really sincerely believe with all their hearts that you have to believe and be baptized. They have no question, and that is what they are trying to preach, but they can't do it. And I said, you know, you guys, if you want to be able to preach and teach freely at church, you've got to follow Christ. And you've got to follow him into the water. And they spoke to me about their fears. The one was frightened about what, she's a believer. They've been believers, they're generations. And they're born again people. About what his wife would think. The other one was frightened about what some dear Lutheran brethren who were baptized in church and church members. He was frightened that if he did this, if he took this step, they were going to leave the church. And everyone had a reason why he hadn't taken this step. And fear had paralyzed them and their ministry in the church and the whole of the church. Can you believe that? And in another church, I have a brother whose wife has fallen into sin. Very serious, very severe sin. And I say to him, bro, why don't you minister to her? Why don't you tell your wife it's wrong? I'm frightened. And he broke down and wept. A few days back, he broke down and wept. I had to hold him. He would have fallen off his seat. He said, I am frightened. I said, you're telling me you're frightened of your wife. Your wife loves you. She's a believer. She wants to look up to you. But as long as fear is paralyzing you, you're not giving it a chance. Abraham stepped out and became our father. Yet, in many points, he was so weak, tempted. The pressure of the devil, fear, frightened that something might happen to him. Warriors are selfless. My warrior died on the cross. And has he fought a spiritual battle that has never been fought before in history? Do you know what he did? He didn't think about himself for one second. He said, forgive Peter, because he just does not know what he's doing when his life is being determined by fear. Where is the beginning of all wisdom? The fear of the Lord is the beginning. And the man who fears man is cursed. Yet the man who fears the Lord is blessed. The man that fears God, as Abraham in the end learned to fear him, has no fear of man. God bless you. That was 8 minutes over and not 5.